Hello and welcome to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host Noelle, and I follow the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Last episode, after the abduction of Magneto and Toad by the Stranger, the issue Uncanny X-Men number 11 ended on a cliffhanger, with Professor X exclaiming that the most dangerous foe the team has ever faced was nearing the X-Mansion. I'm picking up on that story today in Uncanny X-Men numbers 12 and 13. And I've actually already covered about half of issue 12, because the X-Men are meeting Xavier's old nemesis and stepbrother, Kane Marko, better known as Juggernaut. That issue jumps back and forth between the X-Men's present and Xavier's past, delving into his early life and his relationship with Kane. Since I covered those sections of this issue previously, but it has been a while, I'm going to start with a quick recap. When Charles Xavier is a child, his father is killed in a lab explosion in New Mexico, and his mother, Sharon, remarries to her first husband's colleague, Dr. Kurt Marko. Kurt has a son named Kane, who comes to live with the family, and Xavier and Kane end up having a less-than-loving relationship. They absolutely despise each other. Later, Sharon and Kurt both pass away, leaving the two boys alone. They continue to fight and hate each other until Xavier leaves to Oxford for college. Eventually, the stepbrothers reunite as they are both serving in the military during the Korean War. While on a mission together, Kane ends up deserting while they're under attack and makes his way into a cave while Xavier follows him. Kane comes across a pedestal holding a large ruby, and an inscription on the pedestal reads, "Whosoever touches this gem shall possess the power of the crimson bands of Sidorak. Henceforth, you who read these words shall become forevermore a human juggernaut." Kane grabs the ruby and starts to transform, growing larger and more powerful, and becoming the villain we all know as Juggernaut. However, just then the cave is hit by a bomb and starts to collapse. Xavier flees and gets out safely, but Kane is left inside, buried under the rubble. Ultimately, the power of Sidorak allows Kane to survive, and he makes his way to Xavier all these years later, with Xavier being forced to reveal this bit of his past to the X-Men. When I covered this story before, my focus was on Xavier's life, so before getting into the issues, I want to start with the nature of Juggernaut's powers as well as their source, Sidorak. Then we'll get into the story from Uncanny X-Men and see how the team does against this powerful foe. They've had some serious fights up until now, but Juggernaut may be the most difficult battle they've faced. So, with our recap complete, let's get started. When Kane Marko is transformed into Juggernaut during the Korean War, he did so by inadvertently becoming the avatar of a mystical being known as Sidorak. In other words, Kane saw a shiny ruby, wanted it, and ended up becoming ensnared by a mystical entity when he got it. Honestly, a trap I would fall into, no question. So, who the hell is Sidorak? He has a few titles, Destroyer, Lord of Oblivion, and Master of the Raging Storm. They don't really give us much of an idea about who or what exactly he is, but give us the sense that he's not exactly the best dude. Probably not somebody you want to spend a whole lot of time around or invite to the holidays with your family. He's variously called a god or a demon, depending on the perspective of the person, but he really just looks like a giant red demon to me. Sidorak actually resides in another dimension known as the Crimson Cosmos. For a time in the past, he did live on Earth, and early humans worshipped him as a god, but then he was banished back to his home dimension. This detail is revealed in New Excalibur number 14 from 2005, but I wasn't able to find out who banished him or why. The ruby that Kane discovered functioned essentially as a portal between the Earth and Crimson Cosmos in order to transfer power to the person who possessed it and extend Sidorak's influence to Earth. Sidorak has powerful magical abilities, including his Crimson Bands of Sidorak, which is a spell that entraps its victim in virtually indestructible crimson bands. Kane Marko's power as Juggernaut comes from this spell, and it later allows him to manifest armor at will. Other magic users can also summon this spell, and it's been used by Doctor Strange at various different times. Sidorak is also a member of a group known as the Octessence. They're a group of 8 powerful magical entities that decide to form some sort of club, I guess. The members are also referred to as principalities, which just means that they can be called on for powers through spells or other use of magic. About 1,000 years ago, the Octessans got together and decided to hold a competition to see which of them is the most powerful. But rather than fight each other face to face, they decide to use humans as stand-ins. So they built temples all around the world that held mystical objects, like the ruby that Cain found, and the first human to touch one of the objects would become one of their avatars. Their plan was for each of their avatars to conquer the world and then battle each other until only one was left standing, proving which member of the group was indeed the most powerful. While Sidorak ultimately ended up with Cain Marko as his avatar in New Excalibur number 15, it's revealed that Sidorak actually wanted Charles Xavier as his avatar due to his telepathic abilities. To his disappointment, Cain got there first. And the ruby gives Cain an impressive set of powers, including super strength, invulnerability, and he can essentially move as an unstoppable force. So once he starts going in one direction, it's almost impossible to impede his progress. But Cain was actually not the first one to wield power as Sidorak's avatar, which is also revealed in New Excalibur number 15. Previously, a man named Jin Tycho had the power of the Juggernaut. But Sidorak, being a jealous type of deity, got mad when Tycho's village started worshipping another one. So Sidorak ordered Tycho to destroy it. Tycho refused. He was not willing to destroy his home and kill his people, so Sidorak took away his powers. And that's when he sought out a new avatar, and Cain Marko became Juggernaut, and when he did, he was more than willing to obey Sidorak's command to annihilate the village and its inhabitants. After becoming the Juggernaut, Cain Marko struggles with both his own nature and the demands of Sidorak. Later, there will be periods where he tries to overcome his own cruel nature and those of his mystical overlord, but at the time of the stories today, he happily operates as Sidorak's destructive avatar. And it's also in line with his own cruel and angry nature that we see as kind of an extension of his bullying tendencies in childhood. After the temple in Korea collapsed from the bombing, Sidorak's power kept Cain alive and unhurt. It took some time for him to escape, but with his powers, he was actually able to live without food or water. And once he was free, he was hell-bent on seeking out revenge against his hated stepbrother. At the end of Uncanny X-Men number 11, Cerebro is sounding an alarm because a major threat is on its way to the mansion. Xavier and Scott are together in the office and have no idea who or what could be threatening them. Uncanny X-Men number 12 opens up in the same moment, with Cerebro sounding a louder alarm than it ever has before. And Xavier's office is off limits to everyone but Scott, who was only granted access after he filled in for Xavier as leader while he was off chasing down Lucifer. But hearing the alarm, the rest of the X-Men race in to find out what is wrong. Scott yells at them to leave because no one is supposed to know about Cerebro, but in an unusual moment of transparency, Xavier allows the rest of the X-Men to come in, saying that they can't have any secrets. We'll see how long this policy lasts. Xavier shares with the team that the machine gives warning of any nearby mutant menace, and the level of alarm Cerebro is giving off must mean that whoever is on their way is extremely dangerous. One question that this issue will leave unanswered is how Cerebro could detect Juggernaut in the first place. Cain is not a mutant, he doesn't have an X gene, and his powers are completely magical in nature. But there's just things like this in these early issues that we have to let go. Continuity doesn't seem to be as much of a concern 12 issues in. Xavier then orders the X-Men to fortify the mansion against the incoming threat. So they rush outside and set up various defenses and traps, including an ice wall, a trench, an electromagnetic barrier, and a wall built out of hollowed-out trees with grenades inside. And I was a little surprised to see the grenades, so I think it's safe to assume that there's an arsenal somewhere in the mansion already. Once the X-Men finish their preparations, Xavier starts to regale them with the story of his childhood and stepbrother, Cain Marco. And while he's telling the story, Juggernaut is getting closer and closer, and as he does, the mansion starts shaking like they're in an earthquake. But Xavier doesn't let this stop him or make him tell the story any faster. He literally starts with his childhood and covers his life up to his time in Korea, which is ridiculous with an enormous threat literally like right outside. But it does increase the drama, so maybe that's what he's going for. Shortly later, Juggernaut gets closer and starts breaking through the defenses that the X-Men set up. None of the traps impede his progress at all, and he just keeps coming. The X-Men are starting to get more and more worried, but Xavier doesn't let them leave and just keeps going with his story. And he takes literally forever, and the X-Men are practically begging him to just tell them what Juggernaut's powers are so that they can prepare. But Xavier just keeps yapping. He hasn't even gotten to their time in Korea when Juggernaut makes it through the grenade barrier, which we then also learn contains sleeping gas? Again, huge arsenal somewhere, probably enough for a small country. The X-Men are watching out the window and see that the gas knocks Juggernaut off balance, but he's able to shake it off and continue his path towards the mansion. And finally, Xavier gets to the part about Kane's transformation, and the X-Men understand a little bit about what they're about to face. Just then, Xavier and Scott realize that they forgot to put up the steel barrier that can be raised to prevent entrance to the front of the mansion, so the team races off to get it in place. Perhaps if Xavier had given the TLDR version of his story, they would have remembered a little bit sooner. But priorities, Xavier's talking about himself. Juggernaut arrives right after they shut the door and breaks through it without much effort at all. Bobby jumps in and valiantly tries his best by building another ice wall in its place, but Juggernaut shatters it and is now inside the mansion. The X-Men square up for battle, and Cyclops uses his optic beam to stop Juggernaut. Of course, it doesn't do any good, since Juggernaut is able to move as an unstoppable force, so he easily just, like, shoves his way through the X-Men and sends them flying all over the room. Juggernaut doesn't pause for them at all and makes his way directly to Xavier. He says, "So, dear brother, we meet again. A pity it is for the last time." And that is where this issue ends, with the X-Men all apparently out of commission and Xavier left alone to face his estranged stepbrother. But the story continues in the next issue. The cover of Uncanny X-Men number 13 shows the X-Men facing Juggernaut, and they have a little extra help, the Human Torch. The issue picks up immediately where the last one left off. The X-Men are all laying on the ground, trying to shake off the attack by Juggernaut, while he looms over Xavier. He tells Xavier that his powers are so great that he can emanate waves of force without even moving, and Juggernaut warns Xavier that he's going to be destroyed. But Xavier replies that he still possesses the supreme weapon, his mutant brain. I'm fairly familiar at this point with Xavier's powers, but I don't actually think his telepathy can stop his oh-so-powerful brain from being crushed. But that, of course, is not going to bother Xavier. He sends a blast of mental energy against Juggernaut, but it barely stuns him. He tells Xavier that the Crimson Bands of Sidorak give him a helmet that can protect him from any psionic attack. Fortunately for Xavier, the X-Men have regrouped and Cyclops orders them to attack. Jean uses her telekinesis to lift Juggernaut up into the air, while Cyclops blasts a hole in the floor and into the ground for Jean to drop Juggernaut into. They're safe for the moment, but they know that it's not going to hold him for long. Xavier has Jean take him to his lab and orders Beast and Iceman to bring along the parts to his Mento helmet, a name he really should have workshopped a bit more. So while Juggernaut's making his way out of the pit, Xavier builds this Mento helmet, which is a machine with a helmet attachment that increases his telepathic powers. The machine charges up, but it can't hold his powers like completely, and so it shoots mental energy out of a safety valve and sends them across the city. In the meantime, Juggernaut has punched and crashed his way back up through the floor, and Angel and Cyclops are trying to fight him off. Beast and Iceman rush over to help, but Xavier tells Jean to stay put with him. And honestly, Xavier's just using his teenage team to stall his very dangerous enemy. We get a couple of panels of people out in the city who start hearing the mental emanations from Xavier's machine through radio transmitters, but they aren't able to make sense of whatever the message is. And we even get a panel of Matt Murdock, Daredevil, using his powers to hear the message while he's in court, but he's at work and can't leave to go investigate. So just ends up being a fun little cameo. The X-Men minus Jean are doing their best to battle Juggernaut, but they are not able to do much to stop him. They slow him down a little bit, but they're also getting the absolute shit beat out of them, and it's clear that they're not going to be able to continue for much longer. Then, across town, Johnny Storm hears the mental thought wave from Xavier's machine while he's out just having fun and getting ready to test drive his friend's race car. He's able to actually make out the message from Xavier and realizes the X-Men are in trouble, but he doesn't want to leave because he starts worrying that it could be a trap set by the Fantastic Four's enemy, Dr. Doom. And while he's trying to decide what to do, the message fades away. The scene switches back to Xavier and Jean, and Xavier says that the Human Torch might be able to tip the scales in their fight against Juggernaut, so he reaches out to him again. The rest of the X-Men are still fighting, but aren't accomplishing much aside from totally destroying the mansion. Beast is pretty hurt, but he's able to crawl his way over to a panel on the wall and start turning on all the training traps that the team uses. He sends a jet of flame at Juggernaut and then trips him up with some of the other obstacles. And for a second, it looks like Beast is getting the upper hand, but when he sends a 10-ton barrel rolling toward Juggernaut, Juggernaut's able to deflect it away with his energy shield. It goes rolling back towards Beast, who does avoid getting crushed, but still gets hit and falls to the ground hurt. Finally, Xavier is able to telepathically convince Johnny Storm to help out, and he flies over to the mansion. He arrives with the X-Men trying to regroup again and continue fighting. This time, Jean is helping. Her telekinesis actually seems to be one of the more useful powers on the team, since she can lift Juggernaut into the air, but Xavier decided it was better for her to stand around and watch him use his Mento helmet this whole time so far. The Human Torch joins the fight and starts flying circles around Juggernaut and sending flames at him, but he doesn't have much of an impact. Xavier then tells the Human Torch to cause his flames to get as bright as possible, temporarily blinding Juggernaut. And then Xavier calls to Angel, who is hurt, to join in. He's able to gather enough strength to start flying around Juggernaut. And while Juggernaut is still disoriented from the burst of flames, Angel is able to snatch away his helmet and leave Juggernaut open to Xavier's telepathic attack. Xavier does take a moment to mock his stepbrother, saying that he got his powers through a freak accident, but Xavier's are his own. Like, calm down. Juggernaut falls to the ground, but that's still not going to stop him. He starts crawling towards Xavier, so this time Xavier uses his powers and knocks him fully unconscious. Xavier thanks the Human Torch for his help and says that now that Juggernaut doesn't have his helmet, the authorities will be able to handle him. He goes on to say that the X-Men will not forget that he came to their aid, but he won't remember any of this. Xavier erases the Human Torch's memory, which he has got to stop doing. Like, it was still bad when he was doing it to villains, but, like, it's understandable. This time, he calls in the Human Torch to help him fix his stepbrother problem, puts the Human Torch's life in danger, and then erases the whole thing from his memory. Xavier is so unethical, I will never get over it. The issue ends with Scott, Bobby, Warren, and Hank all lying in hospital beds in the mansion, and Jean acting as their nurse. And then Xavier comes in and makes a joke about them all needing to heal up so they can clean the mansion. And so the issue ends with Xavier just closing it out in total dick mode. Basically, he used his team and a member of the Fantastic Four as pawns to get the shit just totally beat out of them while he worked on his little gadget, and then since he kept Jean out of the fight, she now gets to serve as a nurse, because what else is she going to do? She's a girl. I mean, this man has a giant-ass mansion, helicopters, cars. You cannot tell me he can't hire someone to help clean and put the place back together or pay for these teenagers to go to the hospital. But I can't act surprised. What else is there to expect from the asshole in command, Xavier? The only way that he's able to have a team is because it's made up of teenagers. They are too young and naive to see through his bullshit or call him on it. And while Xavier told the Human Torch that he would be giving Juggernaut to the authorities, we find out in a later issue that he keeps him chained up in the basement of the mansion, completely comatose, for months. Which, to be fair, Juggernaut's a bad guy, he's dangerous, but he keeps him unconscious and in literal chains. That's a whole other level of messed up. Like, how did Xavier ever get the reputation as the good guy? It's my one mission in life. That's the true reason for this podcast, is to turn people against him. But that is the end of the X-Men's first fight against Juggernaut, and it's really the most dangerous fight they've had so far. Their lives were really at risk from his attack, and we haven't seen the team get this physically hurt before. Up until now, even when it's been one of their serious fights, it's kind of Looney Tunes style. But this one was a total brawl, and the X-Men were the other guy. Next time, though, the team meets the mutant-hunting Sentinels for the first time. These machines continue to be an ongoing threat for the X-Men throughout the decades, and I will cover their origin in the next episode. I can't wait. I always think of the ones from the cartoon, so that will be fun. Thank you for joining me. Juggernaut is also one of my favorite villains, so I was looking forward to these issues. Until next time, you can follow the Instagram at X-Men Unraveled for updates and pictures from the issues. I also started a Threads account. I'm trying to use that a little bit more, too. If you know anyone interested in the X-Men, definitely let them know about the show, recommend it. Ratings also help other people find it, so either of those are definitely appreciated. And that is it for today. I will talk to you next time.